You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. We turn now to our trusty Dakota Political Junkies for a political news roundup. Jonathan Ellis is co-founder of the Dakota Scout, and Tom Dempster is a former South Dakota State Senator. They joined us in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Tom Dempster and Jonathan Ellis in the Moment studios here at our Sioux Falls space. Tom, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Delighted to be here, Lori. Good to see you.
Jonathan, welcome as well.
Thanks for having me.
What are you covering right now? What is interesting in the before legislative session, but summer's over, college is back in session, what's happening in state government, particularly that you tune your journalistic eye to this time of year?
Well, I tend to, and Tom would know this from his days in the legislature, but this is a time when he's mentioned the session, but this is a time when lawmakers really are kind of starting to get proposals together for bills. And so I try to, make some phone calls and ask mm-hmm. some lawmakers kind of what they're working on, what are going to be some of the big issues. So I'll probably start having to do that soon enough. Property taxes, of course, will be another issue going forward. On the governor's side of things, we saw sort of a fairly significant policy proposal put forth by Dusty Johnson on data centers. Mm-hmm. And there's some separation between what he wants to do in that regard. Data centers, of course, are necessary in order for artificial intelligence, AI. It's sort of a race that the United States is in with the rest of the world in terms of being preeminent. And the Trump administration really wants data centers and AI supremacy. And so you see push for data centers. And the Federal Reserve of Minneapolis has done some research in our district. We don't have any data center, hyperscale centers here. Interestingly, in North Dakota, they have the most in this district, which includes the Montana, Minnesota. And that's probably in some respects because their former governor had come from the tech industry.
Sure.
Yeah. So, but anyway, Dusty Johnson, he wants to, we're one of the few states that actually taxes the electronic equipment, so they don't make it, so it's not making them competitive, so he wants to make an optional rebate program.
And he wants that as a candidate for governor or as a U.S. House of Representatives member?
It's a state issue.
All right.
And
so he's using that to separate himself from other candidates for governor, is what you're saying?
Yes. Right. Both John Hansen and Toby Doden do not want to give tax breaks for data centers. Larry Roden isn't in the race, but... We can pivot to some numbers that might show that some good news for Larry for Governor Roden. Morning Consult does their sort of regular favorable unfavorables of governors and U.S. senators, and of course it's kind of a running survey that they do year round. Mm-hmm. And then they release the averages out, and Governor Roden had a fairly high 57% approval rating. That wasn't in the top 10 in terms of approval rating, but where it was, he was, I think, only in terms of disapproval, I think he was like third best in the country.
Okay.
So very high favorable, very low unfavorable. So that's kind of a good number for him as he's pondering his future.
Tom, go ahead.
But wouldn't you expect that? I mean, number one, you had the special session for the legislature. You had the prison vote say yes. Obviously, that's a product of a very well-equipped task force that worked really hard, but it's also a function of the governor's ability to pull together a two-thirds vote on sometimes a very controversial and difficult subject. Mm-hmm. And you'd have to give kudos to him, certainly to the task force as well, but you'd have to give kudos to him for the prison passing, would you not? That's got to be, I would think, important in that approval rating.
I would say, yeah, but also you got to keep in mind that this is sort of a running daily. So a lot of this numbers comes before that. So this is a running kind of that they do. Yeah.
And it's a general poll, right? So it would be the average voter. Does the average voter know there was a prison task force? And that Governor Roden led it to a vote.
I hope they do. That's my job to kind of tell them about it.
People listening to this show do.
Right.
People reading Dakota Scout do.
Thank you, Lori, very much, by the way.
I'm just saying, when you're doing a poll, you're not only polling people who are keyed in to the state government news of the day.
That's very true.
So his popularity might not be because, I guess what I'm wondering is his popularity because of his successes, or is his popularity because of his general image in South Dakota?
Sure. I think certainly his popularity is one of presence. Mm-hmm. Larry Roden has a good presence.
People like him.
I've had the pleasure of working with, he was on my State Affairs Committee when I was in the Senate. Mm-hmm. He knows his stuff. He's solid. Oh, by the way, you're never going to convince him of anything that he isn't already behind. but he's a good guy.
And how does he compare to other governors? Do you know how he compared to Noem or?
In terms of favorable?
Yeah. Like overall, do you have any recollection of exactly how well those governors were doing before?
I wish I had the exact numbers.
Yeah. Dugard
was always very high.
Yeah.
And I think Kristi Noem was high at times.
she probably had a high disapproval rating.
Actually, she kind of struggled in the beginning. It was the post-COVID era that I think where she bumped up and then
her negatives up too though.
So
one of the things about Governor Roden is that people don't have an active dislike of him.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's not particularly polarizing yet.
Right.
When does he announce for governor? What would be a good timing if that's something that he intended to do, which all people generally seem to think that he is going to run? What's a good time for him then to say officially, this is my campaign?
Well, you can start collecting signatures now before January 1, I believe. I could be standing. They've changed that a little bit.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think if I'm him, I wait.
Until the session?
Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, keep in mind, Kristi Noem didn't, ran for congressional, she didn't announce till I think February or March of that year. So, I mean, she waited very
long
time for the
primary. What do you think,
Tom?
Timing?
Well, I don't know about timing, but one of the things that always really surprises me and disappoints me, because I can't believe that candidates have to do this so much and have to do this so continually. And it means get on the phone and personally talk to people and ask them for money. Get on the phone and personally talk to them and ask them for money over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about congressional candidates, some of them, I think, if I'm right, and I think I am, say you spend 3/4 of your time on the telephone trying to raise money. So the key, one of the key ingredients for sure is how much time is Larry Roden spending on the phone asking people for money, and what do those dynamics look like? Does he have the capacity to raise money? I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. So to be determined.
To be determined for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about the general tone of politics, Tom, because, you know, when we talk about favorability rating and, you know, the likability of a governor or a candidate, and then the ways that, you know, someone like Dusty Johnson is, you know, putting forth policy that maybe separates him from others, and they're trying to find ways to distinguish themselves. That's a fairly nuanced conversation. But if I just open up my phone and start looking at my news apps.
Ooh, don't do that.
You get depressed pretty quickly.
Yeah. If you just
what are you
open,
noticing?
Yeah. If you just open up your phone and look at your news apps.
Yeah.
Or worse, if you turn on your television, almost regardless of what station that you listen to, even if you listen to all three or four of them, mm-hmm. what you're going to hear are all of these incantations that talk about anger, that talk about hatred, that talk about humiliation, that talk about resentment, that talk about fear, and that talk about a lust for dominance. You hear that over and over and over again. Hmm. And in a book that I recently read by William Gladstone that for some reason I got in the mail yesterday, he talks about the importance of a democratic society, the importance of life, liberty, and the pursuit of freedom, or for you, Jonathan, for Tom Dempster, and for everybody else that's not like you. And anything that's different than that is antithetical to a democracy. And any time that you impose anger, I'm angry at you for having done something to me, as you hear every day when you turn on the television, when you hear hatred for another human being, which, by the way, doesn't go away, always persists. It does not go away. When you see our political leaders offering humiliation to people, one thing for sure, if you want a war, take away somebody's dignity. If you offer resentment and hostility, this has been done to you and we need to get back at them. If you invoke fear, you have to be afraid of these people. Once you do those things, you can do anything to them that you want. And that is profoundly anti-democratic. And, says William Gladstone, what you do about it is when you hear anger, hatred, humiliation, resentment, fear, lust for power, is you take out your garden hose. Those are all meant to inflame you and to inflame dark passions. Hmm. Don't let that happen to you. Take out a garden hose and pour water on the fire and say, that is not for me. That is not for a democracy. Go away. Stop it.
What is the water in this case? More words?
The water is maybe you're contacting those individuals or you're contacting or having discussions with your friends and say that kind of talk is inconsistent with our democratic society and left unchecked will destroy our democratic society as it has done in so many other governments in throughout the history of time. We cannot allow that to happen to our democracy. Just stop it.
What about when people say, but can't you take a joke? I was just kidding. Or, conversely, this is the thing that needs to be said, and I like this person because they're the ones who said it.
Right.
I'm not saying Lori would say that, but that's what you might hear around your family table.
Lori would never say that.
Probably not. Lori's got the public radio gene.
Well, the answer would be, yes, I can take a joke, and that's no joke.
Jonathan, what is this bringing up with you? Because you're covering a lot of the things that people are saying, you know, if they, and you're making decisions. Do I cover this tweet? Do I cover these remarks? Do I cover the response to these remarks? And you're making decisions every day about what to put in the Dakota Scout that either amplifies or platforms that language because it's in the public interest to really talk about it, or that ignores it because it's like, no, that's not really worth our time.
I don't really have those issues. I think that by and large, local politics, because we're covering local politics by and large, is pretty, we haven't sunk to that standard. You know,
Larry Roden said the governor of Illinois should eat a salad.
Right.
And he made a fat joke, right? That made headlines.
He was defending Christine Ohm, obviously. Mm-hmm.
But that's qualify as somebody who's humiliating somebody from a personal, and then people would say, oh, well, that's just...
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if he said he was joking.
Let me put it to you this way. And this is, I was thinking of this last night because I was on X, the news app, and Dan Pfeiffer, if anybody remembers Dan Pfeiffer, was retweeting Caroline Leavitt, the White House press secretary, and he sent something very derogatory about her and how she's spewing all this. Now, Dan Pfeiffer was the communications guy for Tim Johnson in 2002. At the Argus Leader, they instituted a rule because of Dan Pfeiffer, because he was such a toxic person. And that rule was no longer...
Internally, you're saying the Argus
Leader? An internal rule we had at the Argus Leader that we would not let campaign operatives attack their opponent, the opposing candidate. If they wanted to attack another candidate, it had to come directly from the candidate. And that was meant to instill civility. Okay,
that's remarkable.
And that was because of Dan Pfeiffer. And then that went into play. He was attacking John Thune. And then that went into play again in 2004, which of course we had that. You know, and that was, you know, Dick Wadhams came in.
I remember him.
Yeah, GOP and same thing. We held the rules were the rules that we're not going to let campaign operatives attack candidates. And again, that was for civility, because the thought would be that, you know, candidates won't want to go off the
dirty
rails.
Their hands,
that's changed. Now you have candidates who are just openly brawling, and they are attacking each other. Whether it's Democrats calling Republicans fascists and Nazis, or you got Trump insulting everybody. Yeah, you know, so that's what's changed, I think, in the time that I've covered politics since, you know, I'd say the late 90s when I started in journalism.
So how are you handling it now? What's your current rule?
Well, I mean, if a candidate's going to say something that is attacking another candidate, yeah, we would handle it. I try not to use campaign operatives to attack other candidates. That's a rule I've kind of held over since the minority leader.
But if it's on the governor's or, you know, congressman's or whomever's, the political leader's X account or on their social media,
then it's fair game.
They said it, even if they didn't write it, they said it because it's on their official account.
Yeah, then it's fair game.
How should the media, Tom, handle some of the toxicity that is coming? It would be very hard. I don't know who could argue that we're not hearing everything that you just said from our leaders, from the White House. I don't know, in the state, I would have to agree with Jonathan that in the state you don't see it as much, but certainly in national politics you're seeing it all the time. How does the media handle it? What's your advice?
The media has this constraint, and by reporting what somebody says, and then what reporting the opposite of what somebody says, and trying to find some sort of compromise, is almost never the truth. Maybe what the media could do is invoking a dark passion of hatred, John Thune said today. wonder how that would fly.
I'm
editorializing. I'm telling you how to think about this, and I can't do that. Yeah.
Why would that be an editorial if someone says, I hate my opponents? Invoking the dark passion of hatred.
Do you hear John Thune saying, I hate so-and-so?
No, you never hear him say that.
He's buddies with Chuck Schumer. Yeah, it's funny that they have to. They're gym rats together. It's funny that they have to.
So my only point is this, Jonathan, is the situation today for all of us, anytime you turn on the news, is simply intolerable.
Yeah.
And so what each of us as individuals who vote have to do is say, no, life, I believe in life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Invoking hatred, invoking resentment, invoking hostility is anti-democratic. Turn it off, pour water on it, and say that's not for me, and talk to everybody about it, and especially vote against those people who invoke those dark passions. Yeah. That's our fundamental
holding them accountable and turning away from them.
That's right. Just turn them off.
I'm watching the Ken Burns American Revolution series now to prepare for a preview interview with them. So I have a screener.
Oh, you'll have fun with that.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, which we all know, but when you hear the language, Sam Adams is pretty fiery in his writing. these are people who are definitely invoking some passions among the patriots and among the crown. Right. So it's not new in America to have a very loud, very boisterous, very messy dialogue where people take some horrible shots at each other in the public sphere of the press and of print.
Which is exactly why democracy and a liberal democracy is always at threat, because invoke the dark passions, and all of a sudden, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is not for everybody. It's just for you. That's why a democracy is constantly and always under threat. Yeah. And when you hear those dark passions invoked, one must say, that's not for me. That's anti-democratic.
Yeah. I want to go back to something that you said when we first started, Jonathan, which is the property tax and some of the big issues that we might see in the next upcoming legislative session. Is the property tax issue coming from, as I have been told, people calling their legislator and saying, hey, our property taxes are a problem, people calling the mayor's office, this is my personal story about my house? Or has it become a talking point where, because it's very popular in South Dakota to say we're going to lower taxes, we're going to do something, like how much of this is a problem in search, a solution in search of a problem, and how much of it is something that really needs to be addressed to make people's lives better?
What I hear from lawmakers who were going door to door in the last election, a lot of them, local in this area, and then certainly on West River in some areas, that was the number one issue that they were hearing from constituents. Now, there is some thought that with the post-COVID boom that came in real estate here, that is slacked off now, and that things will catch up. You know, so there's maybe there's some thoughts in there, and these are among local government officials, I think, who think, well, you know, I give it some time and everything will even out as it is. But in talking to lawmakers around here, a lot of them will tell you that that was the number one issue.
Yeah. So that other issues, data centers, probably an issue.
Senator Casey Crabtree will be one of the prime sponsors on that legislation. We interviewed him for our podcast yesterday, and he explained it. He's obviously in the energy business, and so he you know, it's an obvious choice, but he's in favor of that economic development.
In favor of what specifically? Dusty Johnson's
yes,
plan?
Yes, okay. That plan give the tax incentives for those data centers because, as he puts it, you know, they want to win the AI race. So,
when I first became a county commissioner, eons ago, one of the things that I did is I went, I think, back to the 1920s or 1930s and read some minutes of the county commission, and I read those minutes and I said, oh, man, our problems today are just exactly like our problems were
exactly
then.
The same. Yeah.
Dave Knutson is a good friend of mine. Dave was a majority leader when I was in the Senate for the past 4 years. He was also William Janklow's. He ran the office.
Chief of staff.
Yeah. Chief of staff. And the one issue then, Harold Jarvis, California, Prop 7, was it?
Yeah, I think that
in terms of property tax limitations, that was the number one issue that they had in the Janklow era.
Yeah.
That issue never goes away. And now with these super increases that we've had in property valuations, it's back again.
All right. What else is on your mind as you watch candidates separate themselves from each other within the Republican Party, especially as we position for campaigns? What are you noticing in the early days of the governor's race? Because certainly, you know, some candidates are out there pretty early.
Yeah,
campaigning pretty hard already.
They are. Toby Doden, he's got to make up the deficit in terms of name recognition, so he's spending a ton of money. So you see him out on TV. You see him a lot of the advertising. They are out and about doing the parades and everything. They were at Hobo Day in the SDSU.
Okay.
Doing all, you know, the Republican. It was kind of, as it was explained to me, all the Republican candidates, it was a little uneasy. Like, you had, you know, they were all there under the GOP float or whatever. And it was kind of a uneasy. But, you know, they're all, like, I guess Dusty Johnson's trying to position himself with that and some policy stuff. So. Yeah. You know, we're still at that stage though where it's doesn't really get hot until later.
Right.
You know, I'm anticipating that it doesn't get really hot until early next year.
Is it everybody's game just to position themselves as close to the president as they can?
Absolutely.
In South Dakota,
Republican,
you have to.
In Republican.
Yeah, you have to contort yourself in every way possible.
Because I am hearing pushback on that of people who are getting, especially from Toby Doden, flyer after flyer after flyer where he is saying the same message again and again, which is like, I am, you know, your Trump candidate. I don't know that's what it says on the flyer.
Right, yeah, but I think it says exactly
that. But people
that.
Are, you know, saying, hey, this is, you know, but he is saying that he is the person who is most like President Donald Trump, but you haven't told me what you're going to do. So where is the line between saying I am the person who is as much like this president who's very popular and then saying I'm a person who has my own ideas? And I'm a person who can,
tick.
Can there be daylight
tick.
Between you and the president?
Tick, 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 tock. That question will be answered, the tock, when Trump endorses a candidate for South Dakota governor.
Will he endorse?
Pardon me?
Will he endorse a candidate?
I don't know. I would think he would.
I would guess
that there are pressures to do so.
Typically, endorsements are worthless, but in this case, it would be very valuable.
Especially when you've got a Republican primary where only a very narrow part of the Republicans elect that candidate.
Do you think that matters? Whoever gets Trump's endorsement, are they just shoo-in then?
I wouldn't say they're
Trump
a shoo-in, but I would say...
If Roden, then it's all over but the crying for Johnson?
I think it's a very valuable endorsement. And again, I don't write about endorsements usually because this one is a value to a Republican candidate in this state.
I do.
Yeah. I think South Dakotans are thinking independently.
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb.
Lori, I think South
Dakota. Not everything the president is doing is popular. People will still vote for that president, but I think when they go down ticket, they're going to pick the candidate they think is going to do the best for South Dakota because they are smart enough to know that not everything from, even though they can't say it out loud, Lord. Not everything that the president is doing is benefiting South Dakotans, so I think they would pick this president. But then they will pick the gubernatorial candidate they think is best, regardless of the endorsement.
Laura, you're absolutely right. Yeah. South Dakotans are independent.
And they might not split the ticket,
and we
but they might
ourselves
think it
for
through.
Being independent.
Yeah. Right.
But we do not pride ourselves in a Republican primary voting for a Republican nominee. That is not independent. That's highly partisan.
Sure. The primary voters is
the
who
primary
are going to show up for the primary.
The primary
I mean, that's
voters
an obvious but a good point. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 75 to 80% of who our legislators are, and they certainly decide who's going to be the next governor.
Yeah. All right. Final thoughts?
If you want to look at national politics, we have two, these elections in Virginia and New Jersey are always very interesting. Off-year elections, they kind of tell where the country is leaning in some respects. So I kind of look at that from a national perspective.
Yeah, get your eyes on those. You have your eye on anything nationally? National issues is going to show up and have consequences for South Dakota lawmakers?
Just a sense of joy and a little bit of jubilation and a little sense of being thrilled at the power of politics and at least invoking some stop to the war in Gaza. That's extraordinary. Let's hope it is extraordinary.
Yeah. Gentlemen, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you,
Lori.